I am Nkosinathi Ndlovu, and this is Tech Central Show. TCS is brought to you by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za for more, and we thank them for partnering with the show to bring us these great interviews. My guest today is a senior leader at the South African Reserve Bank. Tim Masela is head of the National Payment System Department for the SARB, a key role in ensuring that the economy functions properly. Tim, yeah. Welcome and thank you for your time today.
Okay, thank you, Nati, and thanks to be here.
All right. Tim, could we start by telling me about your background? You've been at the Reserve Bank now for as long, I think, as South Africa has been a constitutional democracy, which is 30 years. Could you tell us about your time at the bank and the changes that you've seen in that time?
Thanks for this opportunity. Indeed, I think the time at the bank has been a very fruitful one, filled with growth. When I joined the bank, I joined in the then IT department, and currently the department is known as Business Solutions and Technology Department, where I was working at the computerized systems of the bank. And some of the projects I got involved in related to the rewrite of the centralized banking system. As you know, the central bank is banker to the government, and thus we need a banking system to actually ensure that the government leverages all the features and facilities that it needs. And then an exciting period emerged way back in 1995. The bank issued the then new vision and strategy that was called the Blue Book. This was the vision for the reform of the national payment system, with several strategies that included the development of the National Payment System Law, where the National Payment System Act was signed into law in 1998, and the implementation of what we call a real-time gross settlement system, which is the settlement system for the country, known as SAMOS, in short, for South African Multiple Option Settlement System. At the time, I had to transfer from the team that was maintaining the financial systems of the bank to the team that was developing this system, and then moved into what we call system integration, while after the system was up and live, so that we integrate the participants to interlink directly from their own premises to the SARB for them to settle their obligations. And then I had the fortune of going into project management, and then the rest is history. I had to then take the ownership of the system as the operations director of the system. And then ultimately in 2012, I was appointed as the head of the National Payment System Department, now taking over the roles of development of the regulations of the law and oversight and supervision, which was much a broader role, including development of systems in the SADC region, which is a 15-member bloc on the southern part of the African continent.
Wow, amazing. What a lovely story. Mm-hmm. But now you mentioned that system that I think the vision started for in 95, and yes. I think it was implemented all the way to the early 2000s.
To 2005.
2005.
Yes.
And that payment system actually had South Africa well regarded as one of the leaders in payments in the world. But yes. We look today in 2024, and it seems as though countries such as India and perhaps Brazil, China are getting the lead. What has changed in that time?
Yeah, I think just to put the base here, this system is a gross settlement system which settles obligations across banks, mm-hmm. that is emanating from transactions executed by corporates, as well as the net obligations of us as the public as we transact. Mm-hmm. Now, from what you're saying, indeed, we recognize that our counterparts in the BRICS bloc, India and Brazil, have advanced in implementing effective retail payment systems. As you know, the BRICS implemented one that is called PIX, that has embedded both banks and non-banks and wallets, accounts, people transacting in the system, and it seemed to be quite successful. And indeed, as part of our journey of reforms, we are also refining ours. You could be aware that we launched a retail offering called PayShap, but as you say, we lagged behind. Although, of course, we were ahead, but perhaps we didn't touch the right buttons, because we implemented a system called real-time clearing, which is a retail offering way back in 2006. But there's some learnings that we take from there, that the system did not become as effective as we would have liked. Mm. But now with the PayShap offering that we have launched recently,
yes,
we actually take in those learnings and hopefully will leapfrog and probably cover lost ground in terms of what we're saying our counterparts have actually happened to be ahead of us.
So, in modernizing these systems, the first part of this is about real-time payments and just adding velocity to how quickly money moves in the economy. But the second is about adding banks and non-bank players to the national payment system. What is the importance of that?
In essence, what we wish to see is a convenience that is offered to the consumer of the service, you and I, as we wish to transact. We recognize that where we're coming from, transacting traditionally happens from bank account. And in effect, as you know, bank accounts from the history were where we save our money. But we recognize that today people don't necessarily need to bank, but they need to transact. And thus, I could have my money in a bank account. But for ease of transacting, I could need to take some of that money and put it in a digital wallet for me to be able to transact. And we find that in that space, it's not only banks that are attuned to play. There's non-banks that are coming into the fold. As you know, we had questioned ourselves as a market why banks are not opening on Sunday, why they have to close, why they have to be closed on Saturday. But then you find that retailers are open all the time. Mobile companies are offering services where they would ensure that their systems are operational 24/7, 365 days in a year. So now we recognize that the banks are the backbone of the financial system in terms of savings and accounts. But the non-banks are emerging in this space in terms of offering wallet services that are convenient to us as the public. Now, we believe that we should move with the times and ensure that we open up the system for entry of non-banks. Now, we started this journey and we had allowed non-banks in some aspects of the system, and there were others that were still restricted. And we are moving in a direction of changing the law and changing our regulatory frameworks so that non-banks can enter the core of the system, which we call clearing and settlement. If we had time, I could just try and explain to you what we mean when we say clearing and what we mean when we say settlement, and why we had kept this closed and non-banks could not have access in the past.
Yes. Yes. Actually, we do have time. Please.
Yes.
What is the nature of clearing and settlement, and what are the challenges of bringing perhaps smaller players who don't have the capacity to handle the large regulatory overhead that banks generally do?
Yes. And indeed, in opening up the system, we believe in a principle of proportionality, meaning that the regulatory framework should meet the risk that we're trying to manage. So we couldn't expect non-banks to meet the onerous requirements that a bank needs to meet, for instance. But just to come back to clearing and settlement, perhaps I hope you are old enough to remember the era of checks, because that's the easiest way to explain these two concepts. In the era of checks, I would get a checkbook from my bank, which I would use to pay people that accepted checks. Now, I will use as an example Absa Bank, because it starts with a letter A.
Okay.
And say Absa Bank gave me a checkbook.
Yes.
And I need to pay you, Nati, for something. let's say you are a plumber, you came and did plumbing work at my house, and you said the bill is 500 rands.
Yes.
I write a 500 rands check, I give it to you. You go and deposit that check at your bank. That happens not to be ABSA.
Yes.
Let's say you bank with FNB, which is the next letter. So, or maybe let me say Capitec.
Yes, yes.
In the new era, you go and deposit that check at Capitec. Now, my money is at ABSA and needs to move from ABSA to Capitec for Capitec to credit your account.
Yes.
So, but I use just this one check. At the same time, there's people from Capitec that have written checks that could have been cashed at ABSA or other banks. So now, in the system as a whole, on a day, there's many checks that are written by parties from all the banks, but they may be deposited at other banks.
Yes.
But for the simplicity of this example, let's assume that we only had five banks.
Yes.
Which would be ABSA, Capitec, FNB, Nedbank, and Standard Bank. Now, the checks have been written and have been deposited across. So when I write an ABSA check and I give it to somebody that deposited it in ABSA, that check is just processed in ABSA. They will just debit my account and credit the other party.
Yes.
It doesn't need to go anywhere. But there's checks that are drawn on ABSA to others and all this, as I say.
Yes.
So every day after the conclusion of the day, you can assume that each bank will have five bundles of checks. First is a bundle of ABSA drawn on ABSA. It doesn't need to go anywhere. They process it in their bank.
Yes.
But then they will have a bundle for Capitec, which are Capitec checks that were cashed at ABSA.
Yes.
A bundle for FNB, checks from FNB that were deposited at ABSA. And a bundle for Nedbank and a bundle for Standard Bank.
Yes.
Now, they have these checks and they need to get the money from those banks of amounting to what the checks are about.
Yes.
So they would take those checks, put them in a suitcase and go to what we call a clearinghouse, which was in the Reserve Bank.
Yes.
They come with the four bundles. And then Capitec comes with the four bundles of the others. They've processed theirs.
Yes.
And FNB comes with the four bundles.
Yes.
And Nedbank and Standard Bank. They sit in a room that we call a clearinghouse.
Yes.
They start exchanging those checks to say, Capitec, I'm ABSA. I have these checks of your people drawn at your bank, deposited at my bank.
Yes.
Now, they tally the amounts and the other bank will check that the checks are valid, they are not fraudulent, and then the other bundle to the other bank. Yes. That's clearing. They are exchanging these instruments.
Yes.
Now they have a total from Capitec to ABSA, total from FNB to ABSA, total from Nedbank to ABSA, and Standard Bank the same.
Yes.
Those totals in the Reserve Bank, we debit the account of Standard Bank, we pay ABSA for the total of the checks. We debit Nedbank, that's settlement. Now we are settling those checks.
Yes.
So first it was this, clearing the exchanging and the determination of how much the checks are and doing the amounts, as I said.
Yes.
So that's the clearing when we exchange. And normally they gave you the checks and the settlement happened. Then you'd post those checks to the people to say, this is what was debited to your account.
Yes.
That was the practice. But then we moved to electronic.
Yes.
That happens with electronic funds transfer. When you do internet banking.
Yes.
You log on and you go to your account at ABSA and you say, I pay Tim at Standard Bank.
Yes.
You issue that transaction. ABSA checks that you have enough money in your account. They authorize the transaction. It's approved.
Yes.
I get a message that I'm receiving money from you.
Yes.
And the same way as those checks, those transactions pile. There's others from Standard Bank to ABSA.
Yes.
There's others from, and then they pile, they exchange them.
Yeah. It's faster now.
Yeah. And digital. Yes. It's not paper form.
Yes.
It's digital and it's the same. And maybe taking it to ATMs.
Yes.
If you go to an FNB ATM with an ABSA card and you put it in, you punch your PIN, a message is sent to your bank to verify the PIN is correct. Mm-hmm. It checks the balance, you have money, mm-hmm. it gives you the money.
Yes.
But you have got Absa's money, but your money is at FNB. I mean, you've mm-hmm. got the other bank's money, but your money is elsewhere.
Yes.
So those transactions are tallied. So on a single day, then people are withdrawing from that other bank and all that.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we tally those, they exchange them.
Yes.
We determine the obligations in the Reserve Bank because that's where these banks bank.
Yes.
We debit the one bank, we credit the other, that's settlement.
Yes.
So that's the concept. Mm-hmm. Moving from clearing, checking all the obligations
yes.
and exchanging them amongst them,
yes.
determining how much each one owes the other one, mm. and at the Reserve Bank debiting the account of the one, crediting the other being settlement.
Okay. So this process yes. has evolved now from a manual process
to digital.
To digital, but yes. then maybe there was digital 1.0 where you have your EFTs,
yes.
which were faster,
yes.
but not necessarily, it could take up to 3 days, for example.
Yeah.
Yes. And then now with initiatives like PayShap, yes. you're looking at an immediate, real-time
yes.
payments. But then what kind of complexity then comes with settling on a real-time basis?
On a real-time in the retail space, this is a good question because essentially what happens is that if I pay somebody by PayShap, they get the money instantly within seconds in their account. Mm. But the settlement will happen later.
Okay.
So otherwise, we could settle it one by one. So normally, settling later gives liquidity benefit because essentially, if you just think about it, if you have these five banks, there's party, my clients dealing with people at your bank, mm-hmm. but your clients dealing with people at my bank. Mm-hmm. When we determine these obligations after exchanging, there's a benefit if we settle later because we settle with net liquidity. What happens is you find that your people transacted at my bank to the tune of 4 million.
Yes.
But at the same time, my people transacted with yours for 3.5 million.
Uh-huh.
So settlement only needs 500.
Uh-huh.
In the books, we'll record 4 million coming this way. And 3.5 going that way.
Yes.
But what is needed is just one to pay the 500,000. And then it settles that. So okay. it's net liquidity because you don't need to have the full 4 million passing this way.
Yes.
And the 3.5 passing that way. In a sense, in this case, if there's 4 moving this way and 3.5 moving that way, mm-hmm. I don't have to do anything.
Yes.
Because I'm a net receiver.
Yes.
You just need to pay 500, yes. which is efficient because it saved you from having the other 3.5 because that's what you are receiving.
Yes.
So the transactions happens in real time and value is given to the people in real time.
Mm-hmm.
But settlement, we can determine frequency, but at the moment settles every hour.
Oh, okay.
So it groups the transactions for that hour, settles yes. them.
Okay.
And second hour, settle them.
Yes.
And so, just like that.
Okay.
And the reason why you settle by the hour, I mean, I don't think the risk is pronounced, mm-hmm. but the issue is people believe that you need to be settled as soon as possible. This guy may run into financial trouble. Uh-huh. So you don't want huge liquidity to build up.
Yes.
You want it settled frequently. But the irony is that the negative is true.
Mm.
If you took the whole day's transactions moving this way
yes.
and moving that way, chances are the net is even lower.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Now people want to be settled frequently.
Yes.
Those are some of the challenges, but the challenges that are manageable, and we as regulators watch that
yes.
and ensure that the banks don't take unnecessary risk. Because remember, the bank has paid the person,
yes.
but they have not been paid
yes.
from the other side. Mm. So, but we manage that, and there's limits and things that we set
mm-hmm.
that ensures that the system will be safe.
Okay. Yes. So yes, you are managing that, and there is some complexity. But now, if you take this from a national level and you move regionally,
yeah.
then the complexity compounds.
Yes.
Because now you've got different banking systems.
Yes.
All accounting for things in different ways.
Yeah.
But the SARB is part of a regional SADC initiative to yeah. actually, what can I say, standardize.
Yes, yes.
What initiatives are going on there?
Yeah, in this regional system, I mean, as if I just have to explain to you our strategic approach to it, we had four strategic initiatives in order to make the regional system work effectively. First, we recognize that SADC is a grouping of countries and we don't have a common law. Each country has its own law.
Yes.
So the first strategic initiative was to harmonize the laws and have a sound legal basis of payments. Because remember, when things go right, there's nothing wrong. But when things go wrong, you need the law to underpin how you're going to resolve those things. So we set out contractual agreements that have been concluded across central banks in the region and the banks in the region, the parties that are providing the services, with the operators of the system. You need a sound legal foundation so that when things go wrong, you can resolve the disputes. So that was the first strategic objective. We have embedded the harmonization of the law as well as the contractual agreements that underpin payments in SADC. Secondly, we took it upon ourselves to implement a payment settlement infrastructure that connects the banks across the region. And we implemented one. It is called SADC RTGS. I'll tell you about the complexities. You can just imagine then we have different currencies.
Yes.
Kwacha versus Rand.
Yes.
Pula versus Luti from Lesotho and all that. How do you actually handle those? That's the settlement portion. The third one was to implement effective retail payment offerings like PayShap.
Yes.
The settlement system is the high value. The retail one is the third pillar, the low value. And the last pillar was to implement an oversight and cooperative regulatory arrangement. Now, you have banks across these regions. The regulators have to come together and cooperate in regulating this thing. Because each one of us have got domestic policy objectives that they have to meet. And the domestic leaders expect you to protect entities in your environment. So we need a cooperative arrangement as to how we regulate together across borders. So those were the four initiatives that we undertook to reform the systems. We have advanced on the first one, as I said, we harmonized the law and have agreements. We advanced on the second one in implementing the settlement system. I'll tell you about the challenges that we're still grappling on with the different currencies.
Yes.
We are now full, and then we implemented the cooperative oversight and regulatory framework.
Yes.
But then we are busy implementing a system called TCIB.
Yes,
the transactions cleared on an immediate basis, just is mimicking PayShap.
Yes,
but on a cross-border basis.
Yes,
so this system has been implemented, is ramping up.
Yes.
But on the settlement system, the challenge that we still need to bring efficiency to is how you convert from one currency to the other.
Yes,
because if I buy goods in Zambia, I expect to get a Zambian kwacha invoice, but my money is in rands. So when I get that invoice, I need to settle it for the goods to come to me.
Yes,
but I have rands. Then we need an exchange rate. How much rent should I pay in from the invoice amount in kwacha to come out the other side? And some of our currencies are not well traded such that you have direct exchange rates. And that brings complications because you don't know what is the exchange rate between the kwacha and the rand. But every day you know what the rate is between the rand and the US dollar.
Yes.
Now, some mechanisms that are being embedded are the US dollar is dominant. So there's a kwacha US dollar exchange rate.
Yes.
And there's a rand US dollar exchange rate. But there's no rand kwacha rate. Yes. But if you have these two towards the dollar, you can derive a rate between the two.
Yes.
And now that's where people say you go through a third currency. Instead of just moving from this currency to this one, you need a reference currency in between that determines that. And what is worse is that you could find that the rands are converted to US dollar and the US dollar is converted into kwacha. And in this exchange rates, there's spreads, there's profit.
Yes.
That is, so there's double profit and the loser is the person that is paying. Because
yes.
they pay the amount plus the costs of the transaction. Mm. So those are challenges and we're internalizing how we can crack the currency conversion issue. Mm-hmm. It's not applicable only to us. It's a yes. worldwide issue.
Yes.
Because if I pay in Japan, it's the same, but I could find that there's a reference between rand and
the yen.
Japanese yen
yes.
or the euro and all that. But there's some other less traded currencies where you have to go through a third currency mm. before you get to the other currency.
Okay.
Those are challenges. And as you can imagine, in our SADC region, most of the currencies, I mean, if you look at the volume and velocity of transactions, I think ZAR is the top and next is Pula.
Okay. And then after
the activities is quite depressed.
Yeah.
Just to give you an example, when we look at stats of trade in SADC, the US dollar, even if we're paying ourselves,
mm.
takes care of 57% to 60%
okay.
of the quantum of the payments.
Yes.
And the rand takes 35%. When I add these two, I'm already at 95.
Yes.
Meaning the rest of the currencies, including the euro and all that,
yes.
they contribute to 5%.
Jeez.
So with that construct, it means we don't trust our own currencies.
Mm.
We pay each other in US dollar.
Yes.
And where it makes sense that we pay each other in US dollar is normally in commodities. If I buy gold, it's normally quoted in US dollar.
Yeah.
Maybe you can pay in US dollar. If I buy copper in Zambia, maybe it's quoted in US dollar.
Yeah.
But when I buy small goods and services, I expect to pay in the local currency.
Yeah.
But you may get a US dollar invoice.
Yes. And as you said, there are costs associated to that,
that's it,
which
yes.
is advantageous to circumvent if possible.
That's it, yes,
but
yes.
now let's zoom out for a second and look at, yes, you are integrating regionally and TCIB is trying to get retail payments so that money moves faster
yes. yeah.
across borders. But why? Why do we want money to be able to move with a high velocity in the SADC region?
Well, the starting point and the first use case that we embedded for TCIB was remittances.
Mm.
Countries around us rely on remittances for people's livelihoods. Mm. And these remittances, at the moment, or when we don't have workable solutions, go through risky means. And I don't know whether you know, if I just take an example of the South Africa-Zimbabwe corridor, there's a concept called Omalaisha, which are buggies or vans yes. that are moving across borders
yes.
with envelopes of money, and commission is paid on top of that. But there could be robberies, there could be accidents, there could be the money yes. won't reach the place and all that. But people leverage that in the absence of alternatives. There's buses that goes across borders, and I hear part of their revenue is to take money across, cash across borders. Mm. So we believe we need to give people convenient means. Mm. And it should, well, we believe most of remittances are for subsistence. Mm. People are hungry, they need that money to buy food. So you need this money to move as efficiently as possible. Mm. And they need to get it as immediately as possible
yes.
because they need it for basic needs that they need every day.
Yes.
So we believe just with a remittance case, we need an effective rail. Then we have small and medium enterprises that are buying across borders. South Africa is in that equation where the small and medium businesses that are buying goods, procuring goods from South Africa, and they need to pay for them. If you have effective digital means, their transactions are not that high. That's why they can leverage a low-value system like TCIB.
Yeah.
But that would go a long way
yeah.
in assisting. And it is my information that these SMMEs, at the moment, use more cash. But maybe the rail is something that we need to put in place to facilitate this. But then the access to the rail sometimes goes to some other fundamental issues like the legal status of the people in the country to access formal systems. They may find it difficult to leverage that. You know that we have quite a number of foreign nationals that are undocumented or in other ways illegal in the country.
Yes.
And we believe they are accessing formal payment systems, but through other people.
Yes.
Because you can't do it yourself. You look for a South African to do the transaction for you. It's opening you up. It's not the ideal place to be in. Yes. Or some of them, even if we could open the system, they could fear that they could be identified and deported.
Yes.
But we are having interventions that are trying to address that so that we can enable even undocumented nationals to access formal digital services.
All right.
And in this process, as you know, Home Affairs would be a key department that needs to work with us. And in the initial conversations, they are open to us collaborating and seeing how we can actually crack this
one. Work together, yes. But now coming back home, I think in around September, the SARB released a report, a payment study report, looking at how money is being used in South Africa and the different way it's being used.
Yeah.
Could you tell us about what the purpose of the report was and what you found?
Essentially, what we wanted to establish is the behavior of the consumer of the payment service, what instruments they use and why, so that we could see how to catalyze in the system to try and give them what we believe they need. And in some respects, to identify any misconceptions, because some of them emerged in the report, where through consumer education and awareness, you could give them information that can enable them to leverage other instruments. But one of the key issues were, if you have five types of instruments that you can access, it's cash maybe, and it's card, it's EFT, and whatever the options are. If we do these payment studies and we are aware of the cheapest of them, the most convenient of them, we could use our catalyst and advocacy role to advocate for people to use the most convenient and the cheapest, which information they may not necessarily have.
Yes.
Yeah. But if we did the payment study and we understood why they're using what, we can have appropriate interventions. And as I say, there were very insightful takeaways that we have there, why sometimes cash is used and what can be done, because people are using it for certain reasons, but if there was an alternative, they could leverage, and what needs to be done. But somewhere, they're not aware of some of the things that if they were aware of, then they could leverage certain instruments. I'll just give you a typical example. People say that report that they don't qualify for a debit card. Everybody qualifies for a debit card because a debit card is a card that you use on the amount that you have put in the bank.
Yes.
But they feel maybe it's the money of the bank, but it's their own money. But it's misconceptions that if you identify, you can address. But if you have browsed our report, debit cards have seen a sizable growth.
Yes. There's also a very interesting trend where you find that debit cards, yes, have grown in use, but they are still, in terms of the number of transactions, outpaced by cash.
Yes.
But in terms of volume, it seems as though people are safer spending more money through their card than they are perhaps
in cash.
In cash. Yeah. What are some of the drivers behind that kind of behavior?
Yeah. The dynamic with cash is manifold. But I mean, some of them, as part of our payment ecosystem modernization, we hope to crack to a great extent. One of the issues is access points where, I mean, if I go to my rural village, chances are I may find that there's no digital acquiring infrastructure. And that shouldn't be. because that's, if there's mobile phone coverage,
yes,
then digital infrastructure could be there.
Yes.
And I could be afforded that. Mm. So now, because I'm not sure that I'll find infrastructure, I rather have R1,000 cash so that I can use. Mm. Now, when I get there, even if there's that infrastructure, I need to dispose of this cash. Then yes. I'll use it. So yes. if we can ensure that rollout of infrastructure happens such that you are comfortable that, I mean, my typical example where I would like us to get to is that I want to find that I'm exercising, I'm uh-huh. taking a run or jog, and I have my exercise watch
yes.
that has got my banking app, uh-huh. and I get dehydrated and there's a lady selling apples on the side of the road. Uh-huh. I need to pick it up and then just pay her
yes.
and then go.
Yes.
If it can get to that, such that acquiring happens almost ubiquitously everywhere, then people will trust that even if I don't have cash, I'll be able to transact. So that's the one part of it.
Mm.
But a misconception as well, people sometimes believe that transacting digitally will eat your money in the account because you don't see yourself giving somebody money and getting change mm-hmm. and being certain.
Yes.
You transact, they will debit your account. And if you don't check the statement,
yes.
you might feel that your money is being siphoned somewhat.
Oh, right.
So some people believe that this is more direct,
mm-hmm.
but they don't know that with digital transactions, and if I buy by card at yes. a merchant,
yeah.
I'm not charged anything.
Yes.
The merchant is the one that is being charged.
Mm-hmm.
And I just pay that amount. That's all that will get off my account. There are no other fees. Mm. So if people knew that, they would have probably cleared the misconception that if I withdraw 1,000 from the ATM, mm. I pay 14 rands, let's say, is yes. the fee. That's all I pay. From there, I transact for free.
Yes.
People feel that way. Uh-huh. To say, when I withdraw, I pay that one withdrawal fee.
Okay.
Then I'm done.
Yes.
From then on, I transact for free.
Yes.
But they don't know that if they transact digitally with merchants,
mm.
they don't pay anything.
They don't pay.
Yes.
So it's experience with the system because, I mean, there's also other benefits like traceability.
Yes.
Where
yes.
even if it's a week or a month later, you yes. think, okay, but what happened on such and such a day? With a digital transaction, you can always go back
and check. Yes. And now, I mean, people, when they transact digitally, that's why some of the entities are even offering you loyalty points.
Yes.
And so now you have a track record of showing that you are loyal to that entity and then
yes.
they can give you something
mm.
or whatever. But yeah, it's just a myriad of issues. But I think with consumer awareness and intervention and education interventions,
mm.
we'll nail that. But of course, there's deep insights that you get why people use certain means
mm.
that can force us to do something.
Yes.
To address what their real pain point is.
Mm.
And that payment study gives you that. And that's why we need to repeat it every so many, hopefully
yes.
every 3 years at the minimum.
Yes.
We must do it and
okay.
go and check how are things moving and why.
Okay.
And where can we try and influence things to move to,
mm.
to for the benefit of the people.
Talking about that, I mean, is moving towards a cashless society something that is desirable when you talk about the benefit of the people? And is that where we're going?
Yeah, we're saying we're careful about a cashless society. We're saying we don't want it's not our objective to move to a cashless society.
Mm.
We want to move to a cash light society
mm-hmm.
or cash smart society.
Uh-huh.
We want people to still have choice if they so wish to use cash. But they must use it where it really works for them and have options to use these digital options where it works for them. Mm-hmm. So we're saying consumer choice should be embedded in the system. Where consumers choose to use cash where it works for them, they should be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, they should be leveraging more digital services because of benefits. I mean, I visit some areas in Limpopo and there's a row of shops and I hear they get robbed every week and all that
yes.
because of cash. Because the criminals know on a Friday at this time there's cash, and then they come. Now you need bouncers. You know about what we hear in the digital media that you need protection. These people that come to
protection
you,
fees, say, these extortionists, yes.
Yeah, you pay protection fee, will protect you.
Yes.
Now people are vulnerable, but we believe that with a cash light society, maybe things could be better. Of course. Sometimes people will tell you that you'll never win because I hear that they'll force you to do a e-wallet if you have digital.
Yes.
But we can't stop reforming because we are fearful of things. Of course, some of the people believe that transacting digital can expose you to cyber crime and all that.
So there are other risks perhaps.
Yes. But we need to address both as we do that. So we should be conscious that people maybe might not trust data because some cyber criminals are there as well that could come in. Mm-hmm. So we should address all of them and make the system safe.
Okay. Now, perhaps at the bleeding edge of digital technologies and digital currencies, cryptocurrency, do you see them playing a role in South Africa's national payment system?
Yes, we believe we sometimes try and separate things, but I'll come back to your question directly. We believe these new technologies are great and we should look at the benefits they may bring and the risks they may pose, address the risks and ensure that the benefits are passed. Now, when we talk at that level, then you come to the products, because the cryptocurrencies, we prefer to call them crypto assets because we don't believe they are currency, but they are assets that can be used for trade. But for simplicity, we can call them cryptocurrencies. We are worried sometimes that when they are conceptualized and developed, they not meaning to solve a payment problem, but they were meant to bring this innovation that now takes us to speculation. You know that they will say Bitcoin has gone up or has gone down and all. Most people that buy it for that. They don't buy it because they lack something to buy things with.
Yes.
They buy it because they feel today it's low and it's going to go up. And they're going to sell it and make a profit.
Yes.
So in that sense, you can read it as an investment type asset.
Yes.
Because they want to invest low and cash in high. And it's not necessarily to say I need to buy it and then I'll go and purchase goods and services.
Yes.
Because you won't lack other means to do that.
Yes.
Of course, where it makes more sense is that in our engagements on these matters is that, and that's why central banks are looking at what they call central bank digital currency, CBDC.
Yes.
Is to try and say, if a crypto asset like Bitcoin is more like used for speculative means, we can issue, as a central bank issue digital currency that enables pure transacting. Because people say they want the peer-to-peer feel. And the peer-to-peer feel is, if I buy something from you or I owe you 100 rands, I just give it to you. And then you take it and then it's done.
Yes.
But with digital, there's other parties in between.
Yes.
It's me with my bank to your bank and then to you to get it.
Yes.
So CBDC, it is said, can give us the same, I give you 100 rand, that is a peer-to-peer feel, because using computer systems, I just transfer the 100 rands from my wallet to your wallet without any other party in between us.
Yes.
So that's what it is said, it will give us the advantage. Secondly, then people talk about something called programmability of money. I don't know whether you hear about that. Meaning that you program money to work within certain parameters. And a typical example, I could say, if we issued a CBDC and we used it to assist poor people, you can transfer it to them and program it that it can only buy bread and this and that. It can't buy beer. Okay. It can't buy what?
Okay.
Yeah, you program what it can do and yes. what it can't do.
Yes.
Or in terms of discharging some of the obligations, you can program how and when that money must move from who to who.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's logic behind it. Mm-hmm. I have money, but it needs
only to, when I receive my goods will can
yeah,
maybe.
Can the money, yes. Yes. Maybe if it's interlinked with some logistics, uh-huh. when somebody signs for the goods, yes. the money should go.
Okay, so, things
yeah,
like
you,
that.
You program behind mm-hmm. how this money can work or something.
Yes.
So it is said it will give us programmability mm-hmm. and it can give us peer-to-peer feel.
Yes.
And there's advantages. But we need to embed this because other people would say, but some of these things that you are talking about, the current can still give you that. So what else are you getting? Uh-huh. But you have to really see value that the move in that direction gives you yes. vis-a-vis what you cannot get in the current system.
Yes. So the Reserve Bank has done some work in terms of central bank digital currencies.
Yeah.
Is it something that's still under consideration or are you yeah. having a wait-and-see approach?
Yeah, no, we did a lot of work about it. It's just that in the last iteration, maybe people will think we didn't come too open.
Mm.
We have engaged in various proof of concept to prove that we can, as a jurisdiction, can leverage central bank issued digital currency for settlement of transactions, uh-huh. for linking them to settlement of buying of securities when you buy government bonds, treasury bills, shares, and all that. You know that normally when you buy those things, you need to get them only after you have paid for them. So you buy shares digitally, you log on the trading platform, you find the shares you want,
mm.
you put a bid, I'm the seller, I agree to sell them to you,
mm.
but the transaction must remain on hold until the payment is made available, then I'll release the shares to you.
Yes,
because I need to be paid first.
Yes.
Otherwise, you get the shares and I don't get paid.
Mm.
So those kind of things
mm-hmm.
That are linked. So we did a proof of concept of linking a central bank issued digital currency mm. with the securities market and ensuring that it facilitates this in the most seamless way.
Mm.
We did a number of projects. You will hear people talking about Project COCA mm-hmm. and Project COCA 2.
Mm.
Yeah, and when we explain to our global colleagues that COCA means pay, that's
oh,
what
yes,
we did.
Yes.
And then we went on to do a project that focused on the feasibility and desirability of issuing a CBDC.
Mm.
Is it feasible to issue it?
Mm.
Is it desirable?
Yes.
And we concluded that work. Where I'm saying maybe we'll get blamed, we never made that report public.
Okay.
The work is completed.
Yes.
We have a report.
So will you tell us if it's feasible or desirable?
Of the desirability and the feasibility.
Yes.
The reason why we didn't put it out. At the moment, we have a team focused on doing further research. And what we're going to do after this work, we're going to publish even on our website our position on CBDC. Maybe it will say South Africa believes that we must issue a CBDC to address these matters. And we'll issue it in 3 years or something. It will say what we're going to do going forward.
Okay.
So the desirability and feasibility work would have just given you something that is not
something
conclusive.
Fake, yes.
Yeah, so you don't just want us to waffle and tell you things
yes.
that are not making you better after you got that.
Okay.
So we felt the report was not made public. We're continuing with research.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we're going to say this is the stance of South Africa in terms of issuance of a CBDC. I'm not saying that's what is going to be in it.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it is desirable. It is feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And in 3 years' time, we're going to issue it and we're going to embedded in these use cases or something.
Yes, yes.
And then people will say, yeah, no, it makes sense. Okay. Yeah, it will help there. So yes. It will be useful.
Yes, and have a direction.
At that time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Masella, thank you so much for your time and your insights.
Great. No, thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Tim Masella, head of the National Payment System Department at the Reserve Bank, for Tech Central Show.